You're listening to the Hollywood Boulevard Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Hollywood Boulevard Podcast. This is co-host Joe Turek. I'm here with the other host, Alfred Crane and Jonathan Moody. How are you guys doing?
Hello, doing very well, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for having us on here first. Well, I guess that's your call to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first two ones were really good. So we kept it in the same time area, but I went with a different direction. So I left the sci-fi horror stuff and went to a comedy this time. So I chose the 1981 film Stripes.
Woo!
a movie that's really near and dear to my heart.
Is it?
And yeah, actually it is. It's just always been there, it seems. I watched it on HBO long time ago. That's the first time I saw it. I mean, I didn't get to see it in the theaters. I never seen it in the theaters or anything, which I would love to see it in the theaters, but saw it on HBO and recorded it on Betamax originally. Really dating it.
I recorded on Betamax too, so I used to have it on there. It's funny, real quick, now that we're talking about Betamax, I used to we watched it so much and apparently rewound and fast forward and everything too much that the scene where Stillman is watching the naked chicks that would like fuck up all the time, and I would always get mad, like stop fucking up, you know.
You wore out the tape.
It's the same thing, you know, same. Yeah, exactly. Like when you're watching those things, and all of a sudden people know you've been watching it too much, you know?
Yeah, I was like a 12-year-old, a 12, 14-year-old boy, recorded off HBO. And so it's just near and dear to me. And a good friend of mine that lives in Texas now, he we could basically hold a conversation just with different quotes from the movie and stuff like that. And it was kind of funny because I was just talking with you before this podcast, Jonathan, and we were chatting back and forth with a couple of the lines from the movie here and there. So it was just it's just this movie really it's just perfect for that. So anyways, I saw it for the first time on HBO. Like I said, I was like 12 years old or so. It's just always have been there through high school. And it's people, other Ramis and Bill Murray movies like Ghostbusters and stuff like that. That might be and Ghostbusters is special too in its own way. But Stripes to me, it just really set it up for me. So what about you? When was the first time you saw it, Jonathan?
Okay. So I was waiting for which yeah. person. you gotta let us know. I don't remember the first time. Like, that's weird. You always supposed to remember your first time, but I don't remember my first time for this particular movie. So I was a huge Ghostbusters fan when I was a kid. Just that movie is as much as this might be near and dear to you more, you know, mm-hmm. that movie was near and dear to me. You know, and so Bill Murray and Harold Ramis in another movie, when I heard that as a kid, I was just like, sign me up. Like, I want to see this. And I probably didn't get half the freaking jokes as a kid, you know. Hell, I don't even get half the jokes as an adult in some of these, you know, some of the scenes. So, but, you know, I remember laughing my butt off at a lot of stuff. And then rewatching it today, we're going to have some fun stuff. We're going to have a good discussion, I think, because it's definitely a dated movie I think Ivan Reitman had a specific style that he did with it. So
you were saying some of the stuff got over your head and all. I mean, it reminds me of I didn't know until I was an adult what a loofah even was. It just always bypassed me, because I mean, what was going on in that scene anyway? So
yeah, it didn't matter.
It didn't matter. I was like, okay, whatever that means, but I'm sure. So but Alfred, what's your story with seeing this?
I think I saw it the first time on HBO. We were living in upstate New York in the early 80s. So I remember watching it on HBO, and then it was just fun, you know. So I don't remember much of it, but I remember laughing a lot. And some stuff that you're saying I didn't really get, but it's like, you know, I was watching Blues Brothers and Animal House and a lot of those movies around the same time. And yeah, I really liked it. And over the years, it's just been one of those things that's like, I've seen it so many times, I remember most of it by rote.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I was rewatching it and I was actually like quoting every single line and I was like, stop that, John. Like I like every single line to like even little things like, ah, thought you were, you know, thought that was a dog around your neck. Like, yeah. Like that. Just, I was quoting every line like to the TV. So, you know, it's one of those movies that you like, I did watch over and over and over and over to the point where it's like stuck in my brain where even I haven't seen it in years. Like I literally have not seen this movie in probably about 5-6 years, maybe, you know, and I still remember every single word. So pretty much.
Well, it seems like I every time it pops on TV, when I have to watch it when it's on, and it seems like I always watch it at least once a year. I think I give it a good watch. But yeah, basically it's one of those movies you can sort of watch without even watching, because it's like you just know it all the way through, because it's just memorable in so many ways. But so the movie originally, it came up, and I was watching a little bit of the documentary on it. It was kind of interesting hearing Ivan Reitman talking about the foundation of the movie and stuff. And originally it was pitched to Cheech and Chong as a movie as for them to go into the army. And it was just, it didn't work out with the managers or whatever. Well,
thank God. I don't know. Now that I'm just picturing what a Cheech and Chong, like now I feel like a stoner army movie would be fantastic and funny. I don't know. But that would just been weird. A lot of times they would have just snuck off and, you know, got high or something, you know?
Right.
Yeah, well, they took a lot of the drug references and all, and they reshaped it when they were writing it, reshaped it into Elmo's character, which was Judge Reinhold's character. So it was kind of fitting for them to have some of the humor in there. But
that is so true, though. Like, there's that weird. Okay, I get it, because there's that weird scene with Harold Ramis talking to Judge Reinhold. He's like, "Are you holding?" Is like, no, man, you know, right? And it seemed like Cheech and Chong kind of thing, like a scene, you know, right? And then he's like, you know, what are you holding, blah blah blah, and he's like, drugs, man, you know. And I'm like, oh god, that sounds so, now every time I see that scene, I'm gonna think of Cheech and Chong. Oh lord, I get it.
Yeah, actually, I have it playing in the background on here, and it's all actually at the beginning, towards the beginning, and it's on that scene right now. So it's kind of funny just having it. It's just Reinhold's character. I mean, and this is before he even played in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So it was real early in his career. But just tons of people in this movie as well. I mean, each you could just go in so many different directions with it. But starting off with Bill Murray. He had one big film in the States before this, which was Meatballs. It was just
Meatballs.
Yeah. And I know that some people love it. Some people, I don't know why people wouldn't like it. So but
technically, I mean, even though he wasn't the star, he had Caddyshack, which he kind of stole that movie from a lot of
that's
people.
That's true.
You know, so even though a lot of times they'll probably talk in a documentary about, you know, was it, about Meatballs being his number one like movie at that whatever. I mean, plus I think he was already on Saturday Night Live. He was already a big, huge name. Like it was just a matter of time before he kind of crossed over into like way, way mainstream films and stuff.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, Caddyshack is, isn't that directed? I think Harold Ramis directs that, or he was involved with the writing of it. So, I mean, I think that them being best friends and stuff like that, it worked out well for when Murray was brought in and shaping the character of the sidekick for being Harold Ramis's character for this. So,
well, I heard they originally, I mean, I guess they weren't looking at Harold Ramis originally, and then Bill Murray wanted Harold Ramis because Harold Ramis could rewrite his dialogue, is what I heard.
Yeah, and I think one of the people that tested for it was like Dennis Quaid or something like that.
Oh my god!
And I'm like, and supposedly he has a cameo, and I'm not a cameo, but he's an extra in the back scene because he was married to PJ Souls at the time, I believe.
Oh wow!
He's sort of in the military at the graduation ceremony. He's just sort of in the background somewhere. I've never been able to see him pointed out. I mean, there's a couple other extras, like Bill Paxton is in one. He's actually in the mud scene. He's in a military getup and stuff, and you can only see him real quick, and he's sitting right next to Ox, John Candy's character.
Have to look for him next time.
Yeah, it's really quick, and it's like when you're sitting down at the table looking on. He has a hat on. The military hat and stuff like that on.
Can you tell it's him?
I think so. I mean, it's young. I mean, that's even before Weird Science and all those for him. So, Timothy Busfield, he had a speaking role in this. I mean, but I think this was actually his first thing. So a couple cameos like that, but back with the main people in the film. So Harold Ramis, his character, to me, he is the perfect sidekick for Bill Murray, because it's like, he plays like, for the most part, he plays the even keel type of thing. Now in the extended cut and stuff like that, there's a scene where he sort of goes off in a tangent, but we'll talk about that later. But he's sort of the calm influence with how Murray is just going over the top with everything. And sometimes you can even see, looks like Ramis is just ready to bust up at him and stuff like that for some of the stuff going on. But Ramis's character was, it's kind of funny to me, because I took, I had a screen name for a long time on one of the sites, and I named it after his character, Russell Ziske. People's like, who the hell's Russell Ziske? I was like, what do you mean, who the hell? Because that's just, to me, that's just something that I've always, everybody knows who Winger is for Murray. Actually, and all that.
But it's funny. I was at Target the other day looking at DVDs and Blu-rays or whatever. Went over to the Pops section, and they had a Stripes Pop with John Winger. But they didn't have, I don't think they had, maybe they do, but they didn't have that I saw, a Russell Ziske Pop, you know. I don't know what that would have been, you know, like what scene they could have like took, you know, and put into that thing. Would it have been like him in his army outfit, or would it have been him in his classroom outfit, or with his big ass hair, you know, and stuff that they had to cut, you know, later? I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, so those are the two, obviously the two main characters. But next up, I guess you have to probably say is Warren Oates, Sergeant Hulka.
Sergeant Hulka with the big toe.
He's gonna see how far he can
stick it up your ass.
Yeah, so he's really obviously famous from Wild Bunch and Badlands and Badlands, stuff like that. So
Dillinger too.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So he fit the perfect army drill sergeant type of character, but supposedly he was one of the nicest guys and stuff like that. And he sort of really held the role perfectly with them opposite.
So have you ever thought that maybe Stanley Kubrick it was inspired by this movie to make Full Metal Jacket? Because if you look at the movie, it is a serious version of Stripes. It is about a bunch of, there's a Joker in the crew that's whatever, that there's a drill sergeant who's kind of an asshole, you know, the whole time. He supposedly dies, and in Stripes he comes back, you know, or whatever, but in this he dies and everything, and then they go off in war and they shoot and, you know, kill people, blah blah blah. It's a similar freaking story, you know, in a way. I mean, I don't know, that's what I was like when I was watching. I go, damn, this actually reminds me a lot of Full Metal Jacket, except like a comedy, you know. Have you guys ever thought about that? Probably not. I'm probably the only one in the world.
No, that's an interesting take. I mean, I thought I compared Stripes to other comedies and different ones that's come out similar to that type of movies in the 80s, but taken into a serious tone with Full Metal Jacket. That's actually a very interesting way to look at it.
In the Army Now with Pauly Shore, was that what you were thinking of? Like,
I was thinking, Private Benjamin with Goldie Hawn came out the year before, I believe, or a couple years before, so it might have predated Stripes, but Biloxi Blues with Matthew Broderick came out a few years after that. Really enjoyed that movie too. There's a scene at the beginning of that with Christopher Walken and Matthew Broderick, which is priceless. But same type of idea of boot camp and stuff like that. And I imagine that's probably where Police Academy came from. It's basically stripes just in a police force versus
that's what I thought because there's that there's the hair shaving scene in Police Academy where, you know, they're like, we're gonna go next, and they're like, cut it all off. And then later on, you know, the guy only got a little, he was like, oh, just shave it off of the top a little bit. And the guy's like, you can do that? He's like, this ain't the army, son. So like, there's literally a scene that pretty much kind of like mimics stripes a little bit, I think. And yeah, that was in 1984, I believe. So I think like a few years after Stripes was a hit.
Yeah. So with the hair cutting thing, I think that Ramis and Murray's hair wasn't actually cut the military standards. But and all the other ones had their hair shaved and stuff like that, which is kind of funny. But
I mean, they were the stars.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they had to sort of play into all that, but other people that was involved, other actors and all in the movie, John Larroquette, he's
Stillman,
Captain Stillman. It's like, and he kicks that one pipe or something like that when he's first introduced, and he goes over to John Volstead, who's next to him. He's like, have that removed. It's like,
you can tell this guy's a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, he's sitting there playing with his army set and stuff like that was great. And then obviously looking through the window at the girls, it's like, what are you doing? But ultimately he ends up getting shipped off to what is it at the very end? He's like becomes a commander of Alaska,
the Arctic, like, or something.
And another thing, they made a reference to that in a Night Court episode. With John Larroquette, where he says something about being stationed in a previous life or something like that as a commander in an outpost in Antarctica or Alaska or something like that. So it's just kind of funny. I mean, John Larroquette's good. I mean, he was good with it.
He got it. Like, his character is an absolute dick. Like, that's all he was set up to be. Like, he's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's, because like, there's that scene where he's, you know, and it's the famous, you know, incoming scene where he's telling the guy, like, I want you to shoot this. And I'm like thinking, okay, how did he ever get captain? Like, you know, as I was watching this, I was going, because he's so dumb. When the guy asked him coordinates, he was like, coordinates? You don't need to have any sticky coordinates. Just fire the thing. And I'm like thinking, so this dude's never actually fired a rocket before? Like, I mean, I understand you're the boss and you're telling them what to do, but like, literally, if, you know, like, he's the worst person in the world. So
the army paid you a lot of money to fire that thing.
Yeah, exactly. paid me a lot of money to fire that thing. And you know, see, it just annoyed me when I started watching it again, going, I never thought about it, but this guy is such an idiot. Like, how did he ever become a captain?
And it's like when he's introduced to he walks up to Hulk at the very beginning, Hulk doesn't even salute him, because Hulk, he's like, who's this ass? and he's like, he knows he has to salute him because of the ranks and stuff like that. So, when Stillman's introduced there with Hulk, what John Candy says as he walks by is just, it's hysterical too. He's like, how's it going, Eisenhower?
Yeah.
John Larroquette's look on his face was just priceless at that particular second, because he's just like, he looks at him like, you asshole.
And great. Candy had a couple of those lines, like at the very beginning of the film. It's just when his first time when he crosses up with PJ Souls and Sean Young, and he's like, is there a movie on this flight? It's like, what are you doing?
Hey, stewardesses. Hey, is there a movie on this flight? Oh my god!
And I know he had a lot of credits in Canada with SCTV and stuff like that. So I think this was one of his bigger American breakthroughs.
Well, we may not, because there is a huge cast list. We may not go into, you were, might not have talked about him, but there's a there's an actor in it that was on SCTV with John Candy and Harold Ramis and all of them, Joe Flaherty, who's actually in the movie, but he has like a small, he's one of the was it not Moscow? Czechoslovakia guys that have the hats on or whatever, and they keep bumping into the they keep like wrecking up their place, you know, like every second something's happening to their place. At the end, they're just like, we give up, you know.
So that was three of them then, right? Who you said Flaherty? No, I'm just thinking Flaherty, John Candy from SCTV.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So and Ramis, I think, was from
SCTV. Yeah. Yeah. Originally. And Dave Thomas actually has a quick spot in it too. He's the one who played Doug McKenzie in Strange Brew with Rick Moranis.
Right.
He's the MC at the Mud Match.
Oh, wow. I don't even remember that.
But he's the one that, but yeah, it's just the interweaving of all these people and stuff like that. I mean, let's see who else we have. PJ Souls. I know that, there, this one, I mean, she'll always be Halloween, but I mean, she worked really well on this. I mean, she was, some of those laughs and giggles that she had with Murray was, it seemed like genuinely like she was surprised with some of his, behaviors, because he just sort of goes off kilter and just does whatever he wants to do at times.
Exactly.
She was funny for the spots that she had. And then there's one of the extended scenes has a little bit more of her in it than was a scene called the Hotel Chateau scene when they were in Germany or something like that. But I went over the main people that was in it. I'm sure there's a couple others and stuff like that, but anything specific you guys want to talk about with it before we get into like the extended scenes and stuff like that?
I like the whole scene where they're introducing each other in the barracks, and it's like, you know, Ox is going, oh, I figured I'd put on a few pounds. I just want to become a lean, mean fighting machine. And you know, Pear Rams are, and then you get one of my favorites. It's like Francis Soya, but then you call him Francis. Francis, I kill you. Call me psycho. And then my other favorite is the guy who's like, I thought I'd join before I got drafted.
There ain't no draft no more.
Yeah.
There was one?
Is the big guy? Is like, oh, man.
Apparently, yeah. Okay, so that's John Deal. I've got a deal with him. I really liked him in a movie called Kickboxer 2, where he's got a small role, but it's a prominent part. So it's all I've always remembered him in. And he played like just a normal guy. Like he was the owner of the club that, you know, or manager of the club that, the boxing club that, David Sloan owned, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. ran. So he was the one who was like the bookkeeper, you know, making sure everything was whatever. So he was a normal role in that. Then I heard about this. See, apparently he decided he was going to basically stay in character as dumb like the whole time. So like he at the end of the movie apologized to Ivan Reitman for being dumb, you know, like, you know, or whatever, right? Because like I get it, like you want to stay in character, you don't want to lose it, you know, you don't want because you know he really isn't like that from what I've seen on other stuff, you know, but he's so good at playing like this kind of dumb character, you know, and it, I loved him.
Yeah. Well, he has like 150 credits and stuff like that on there. I always remember from Miami Vice, because when he was on TV show Miami Vice, he was Detective Zito. So one of the
nice,
not the main detectives, obviously Crockett or Tubbs, but the secondary and all that. But yeah, it's like when they introduce him at the beginning, it's like, when Hulk is saying, I don't care how smart you are, how dumb you are. And they say how dumb you are, they cut to him. It's like,
and he's kind of giving like this, like dumb look, like,
yeah.
You know?
In the documentary, it talked about, it was like right when he was getting to start acting and stuff. And he wasn't even sure what go back to one meant and stuff like that. So he was really raw on the set, but I mean, he became that character for this, and it was,
well, that was kind of perfect that a new guy played a dumb character, because if he has to act like, you know, he's dumb, you know, and he doesn't know anything literally on, you know, about the filmmaking, is perfect, you know, for him, I think.
And it was good with him because he bounced off of him and Candy bounced off of each other a lot too. With
The some of the stuff. That scene is just priceless. Like, oh, where were they? Russia or something?
Italy.
Italy. We're in Italy right now, and so you have to make my bunk. You know, if we were in Germany, I'd have to make yours. So sorry, we're in Italy right now.
And it was just John Candy was his Ox was conning him the whole time too, because it's like when they were in boot camp beginning, they were playing cards, and he's trying to teach him how to play cards, and he's like go ahead, bluff me. And he looks at his cards and stuff like that.
So it's looks at his cards. That was the best part, you know. And I love how people started coming to watch because they wanted to see, you know, like. I think the character's name was Leon, the African-American guy. And they never say his name or anything, but he's credited on IMDb as Leon, I think. I'm not sure. I was trying to look that up, but I couldn't find it. But he was like, and I think he was the only black guy in it? Because I thought it was really funny when they have that line where it's like, black guys help the white guys. And I'm like, you know, is he the only black guy in there? Like, that's so messed up.
Yeah, he had that. He did that expression when Hulk was interviewing him and all. And he did that look when Francis made that comment about killing people, and he was like that ooh. type of thing. It was funny, but
And then he was like, "You're on my death list now," or something.
You
made the list.
Yeah, exactly. You just made the list. it's just there's lines everywhere, and it just never stops.
I was telling my dad, so I was quoting, because one of my favorite lines of the whole movie is the part where they ask him if they're homosexuals, and they said no, but we're willing to learn, right? And then after that he goes, do we get sent to a different camp or something, to learn, you know, right? And I told my dad, was like, I don't remember that, you know, I don't remember that line. And I go, that was probably because you were laughing so hard at, we're willing to learn line, that you just don't hear the next line. And that's how that movie is. It's literally joke after joke after joke after joke. And it really doesn't let up at times. It's kind of like, I would compare this to like Airplane, except not a parody, but like, you know, where it's just so many jokes, you have to watch it like 50 times to get them all, you know?
Yeah. And then you watch the expressions of not just the jokes, but you watch the expressions of some of the other characters in the scenes. And some of the time it looks like they're just busting up and stuff like that. Like they're just having a great time with it. And mentioning Airplane actually is funny too, because I watched on YouTube, they had an old Siskel and Ebert review of Stripes. And Ebert was comparing this. He said it was year after year. He says last year, 2 years ago was Animal House or something like that. And he says last year was Airplane, and now this one. So it was like in that vein of summer,
comedies.
Yeah, that fit.
Well, what did now? I'm curious. Did Siskel? What did they give it? Thumbs up? Thumbs down?
Oh, they both liked it.
Okay, they both gave it a thumbs up.
Ebert liked it more. Yeah. Which kind of makes sense, because he's sort of Siskel's a little bit more, I'll say, regimented with his. Yeah. With an Ebert sometimes goes off in tangents and likes something completely bizarre, and he's a little bit more open.
I always laugh at how they treat horror films back then, because fucking Ebert wrote horror films and shit, you know, like he wrote a fucking fast, you know, pussycat kill type movie, you know, or whatever, you know what I mean? Back in the day, I forgot what it was called. It's like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls or something. So he had made like those kind of movies. So like, why did he hate horror films so much? I wonder. Like, I guess it was that time period where it was just like now we have that time period where people hate certain things, you know, and everything, and are very against certain tropes and certain things. Back then, I think a lot of people were very down on horror films. So even though it's not a horror film, I'm just stating that as a thing of like, Ebert always surprises me. So it's always what I want to know. I want to know if Ebert gave it a thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, they both liked it, but I think it was Ebert liked it more. And he had a blast introing a couple of the scenes and stuff like that that they showed, because they showed pretty long clips too, which was kind of good. But one of the other topics we want to talk about in this was the extended scene versus the regular cut of the movie. So the regular cut of the movie is like an hour and 47 and or something like that, and it's like 15 minutes longer or so. So the 15 minutes, there's one scene that makes up like 2/3 of that. It's that acid trip.
It was the longest of the cut scenes, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And personally, I'm glad they cut it, because it just went off and derailed. But I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are, Alfred and either one.
Oh, yeah. You haven't seen the extended cut, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me explain. So Alfred hasn't seen it.
Okay. So you want to explain the scene maybe a little bit?
Yeah, I'll explain the scene a little bit. So let me explain to where it goes in between, right? You know, the scenes that they're going, they're all walking together. I don't know if they're singing or something, but they're saying like Army, Marines, blah, blah. And then it cuts in the original cut. It will cut to, the Stillman watching the naked girls scene. Right. So that's where those scenes cut. Then there was a scene that goes on where, I guess, it was weird because it starts out with what's his name, Ziske, saying he had the greatest day of his life, and I don't know if he was being sarcastic or if he was being serious. It was weird. It was like how he was saying it, and Bill Murray says, "Let's get you out of here." So they go and kind of sneak off, and they go onto a plane, you know. Or right before they get to a plane, he said, "I've been, you know, so and so gave me, I guess it was."
Elmo
gave me certain drugs. I think they're dopamine. And he looks at him and goes, "No, those are acid." And he was like, "Oh God, I took 6 hits of this." And I was like, "Okay, this is gonna be a fun flight," you know. So they're there, and then a whole army group gets on the plane, and they're going off on a mission. And so there's Bill Murray and Harold Ramis just sitting on the plane, and everybody's like staring at them. And this guy's like, "Who are you?" And they say, "I'm Major."
They're like Major, yeah.
Major and Captain or whatever or something. And so they say, basically, this is top secret, which I thought was hilarious. Which, I don't, was that in Top Secret, the movie Top Secret or something? I remember hearing double top secret somewhere.
Is that a line in Animal House, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Double secret probation. Okay. Yeah. So double top secret is what they say. So they go, they let them in, they let them go on. And their plan was to jump, parachute into Colombia. South America. So they parachute into the jungles of South America. They fall, and Ziske is still high on acid. So he's just having a blast, just figuring out, we're going to go do this. We're going to cut these things. We're going to kill these things or whatever. I was like, oh my God, this scene should not have been this long, like whatever. Then they get caught. They get kidnapped by a group of,
Runners or something.
Drug runners, drug cartel. They get kidnapped by a drug cartel in the middle of the jungle, and they give them the acid and put them in a soup or whatever. And then they basically are saying, "It's cutting time. It's time to kill you guys." And so then Bill Murray makes up, does some song, and that has one word. I forgot what it was. But it was like Kuana or something. And it was like Kuana, Kuana, Kuana. Like, he just keeps singing this like one bit, and they start singing it with him, and they like sneak off, and then they find the plane, and then they get back on the plane. And that's it. It's literally the whole scene. No.
Okay. Yeah. I
will say this. It totally made sense that it was in there for the fact that later Holka says, I heard two people snuck out, you know, right? But I, you know, but he doesn't know who they are. Please let me know. So Ziske puts up and says yes. And then, and what's his name? Doesn't, Winger doesn't admit that he did it. And, cause he's, I guess, too proud or whatever. And so the whole platoon has to suffer for that. So I've, you know, I was watching it going, you know, I never asked myself who did it. I never knew about this. I mean, I didn't need to, you know, like it didn't kill my story. Like I didn't hear that scene originally and go, you know what? I needed that. Like, wow. Thank you for putting, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't needed for it. I don't know. What do you think, Joe?
I'm glad they cut it, but it was interesting that you could watch it actually on the DVD and watch it in the film, all these scenes in the film. And it just pops up at the bottom and says extended scene. And then it says end of extended scene when the scene's in and out of the scene.
Oh, guess what? It doesn't have that in the Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
It's just literally in there.
Yeah, on the DVD, a little thing pops up in the stripes font. It says beginning of extended scene, and then it says end of extended scene or something like that in the film.
Yeah, cool.
So I'm glad they cut it, because to me, it just completely derailed the film from it would have derailed the film from where everything that was going on at the time. And I can't remember if it was Reitman who wanted it. One of them wanted it. The studio wanted it one way, and he wanted it another way. And then it's but ultimately they cut it out. But the other scene, I mean, I'm glad they cut it, to be perfectly honest, but it's interesting to watch.
What was that?
How long was that scene?
It was like 8-9 minutes, it seemed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the longest, I think, of all of the cut scenes. There were two others that I felt were not needed. I mean, like none of these were needed, you know, but they sort of explained things. Like I was thinking to myself through this whole movie, now that I've, you know, watched it or whatever, but watching the cut scenes, how fucking easy Ziske like went along with anything Bill Murray told him. You know, there's a cut scene. Okay. So in Stripes, and I'm sure Alfred, you've seen the original cut. So that's it. So, you know, in this cut where he's doing the push-ups and he's like, I'm out of shape, man. I need to go into the army. And then it cuts to them going into the army, right? You never once asked to yourself, how did he talk, you know, Harold Ramis into this? But there's an actual cut scene where he talks Harold Ramis into coming with him, along with him. Oh. And he's like, basically, hey, you know who would be great in the army? You would be great in the army.
You'd be a general within a week.
Yeah, you'd be a general within a week. You're so smart, you know. Well, this guy was in the army and he's not very smart. You're much smarter than him. You'll be all right. And then he looks over and goes, okay. You know, like he didn't like put up any kind of fight for it. He's like, at first he was like, no. Okay. You know, right?
They talked about Winger wanted to join so he can get his act cleaned up, but he also wanted to buy a Winnebago and also go to like Nepal and get like women overseas or something.
That was another thing. Is there's that part in the movie where what's his name? He's about to go AWOL, and Ziske jumps on him and starts yelling at him. He's like, you going AWOL, and then he looks at him and is like, you know, where's the Winnebago? And the thing is, that was a cut scene. So nobody in the world, even like, I've never put my two, like they've never mentioned Winnebago before then, you know, in any other scene until that cut scene. So when I watch the movie now, if I watch the regular version, I'm going to start going, oh my God, they never, you know, like where, like, when did they talk about a Winnebago? Like, well, that's so strange, you know?
And then the other scenes, I mean, there's a couple other little ones. And then the other one was when they're in Germany, there's some basically sex scenes and romance scenes between both of the couples, and PJ Souls is naked for a good minute or so, and Murray's jumping around on a bed acting like a swimming diver. Doing all sorts of flips and twirls and stuff like that. So
it's ridiculous.
And then the other two are in a tub together, naked.
And you sort of, like, you can almost see Sean. What's her name?
Sean Young.
Sean Young, naked in the scene, but you can't. I read a thing on IMDb trivia that apparently Sean Young hated Bill Murray. And Bill Murray hated Sean Young, but they hated each other like during the making of this movie because Sean Young hated his acting style of improvising and changing all the lines and shit, you know, which he did all the time, you know.
Well, he was the star.
Right. I mean,
she was just starting her acting, starting her career at the time. So, I mean, it was, and she was a supporting character. So I guess she's, but I mean, yeah,
apparently he has said that he would never work with her again, and he, as far as I know, he's never has. So, like, I don't know, it's weird.
Interesting. But other pieces of the film that really has my interest is there's a serious scene when Hulka and Winger get into it in the he says, "Come to my office," and it's like the toilet. It's the bathroom, and I mean, it gets real serious for a minute, which, and some people might be like, well, it doesn't fit in a comedy, but it's so, and to me it was so well done, and it kind of gave some momentum to what they're trying to do, what at least Hulka stands, what he's trying to do with people.
That wasn't an extended scene, was it?
No, that was just a regular scene. The other extended, the other short extended scenes, I don't think really added, or it was kind of somewhat forgettable stuff that didn't really need to be there.
Well, to go back to Full Metal Jacket, there's the scene where he's like cleaning his gun or whatever, and he's, you know, he's the, he get the drill sergeant gets shot, and then he kills himself or whatever, Gomer Pyle, you know. I feel like a lot of these scenes, it sort of shows how sort of depressing, in a way, the, you know, that thing is, like, it gets really dramatic because, like, I mean, if you put a bunch of people together that don't even want to be doing half the stuff they're supposed to be doing, you know, you're going to get people, there's going to be tension, and especially with the boss, there's going to be tension of who's, you know, who's the boss, you know. And it's so funny that Bill Murray kind of takes over as the leader of the platoon, as he says he will, you know.
Yeah, and he has that great line, "We're 10-1." I was like, that's a nice little jab that Ramos was probably having at Vietnam at the time. That they didn't win that war, the U.S. didn't win that war. Go ahead. Somebody have something?
No, unless Alfred, did you have something to say?
Oh, you talk about them. Towards the end of their training, where they do that whole boom shakalaka, that was like one of the classic scenes of the movie where they do that whole marching, that the sequence drill. And they're like, "Oh, these guys are great. You completed basic training all on your own without any adult supervision." Sure,
that's a fact, Jack. Yeah, that's when he said that. And then he has the, like, what kind of training? Like, that's how I, like, if I tell people I'm watching this movie, that's how I do it. Like, I'll be like, it's, you know, I'm watching a really classic film. What movie? You know, what kind of training you want? You know, army training, sir. Army training, sir. That's one of the best, like, oh, God. So real quick, before it gets too late, I want to mention something to you guys. And I want to get your guys' opinion on this, because this might blow your guys' mind or whatever, or thoughts. I don't know if you guys thought about this or not, but the ending of the movie, sort of reminds me of Ghostbusters End, where they are celebrated as, like, heroes, right? Mm-hmm. And they weren't fucking heroes. Here's the thing that really bothered me. They were not heroes. First of all, John and Russell decide to go and steal the EM50, right? and take it over. They say they're going to go get it washed, you know. They go over to get their girls so that they can party and have a good time and not be doing their job, right? Captain Stillman gets there, sees it gone, and is freaking out. You know, he was going to fuck up. He was about to, like, he was bringing a girl on base when he wasn't supposed to be doing that anyway. But he's like, where the fuck's my truck? You know, so he, like, goes and gets the crew together to go and get it back, even though Holka told them a very easy way to get it back, you know, or whatever, and says, like, you know, and he thinks they're Russian spies, you know, or whatever. So they're going to go over to Moscow or Czechoslovakia, whatever, you know, and bring back their truck. That was like their mission, right? And then they get captured because they're dumbasses and go the wrong way and get captured, right? Here's the thing. They were captured because, A, at the time it was Cold War and Russia was not fans of us, you know. So Russia, of course, just kidnaps us because they look like we're trying to infiltrate on their fucking land, right? Mm-hmm. So here we are, a bunch of Americans getting kidnapped, you know, right? So here's what really makes this really bad is that John and them come back, they blow up everybody in like Russia or whatever in Czechoslovakia. They're just shooting everybody and they kidnap their people, blow shit up. They have the tanks blow up. I mean, they're causing property damage like you wouldn't believe in order to get back their people who shouldn't have been there in the first place because they shouldn't have screwed up. And at the end, they're getting awards and medals and you know, being on the news and everything and, you know, infiltrate as heroes. What the fuck? Like, literally, they fucked up majorly, you know?
Yeah, I think sort of the last, like, 25 minutes or so when they go to Italy and stuff like that, it's almost – and that this is one – this is if I'm going to have any pet peeves with the film, when they go to Italy and stuff like that, it turns into a little bit of a different movie because mm-hmm. Once they get to graduation – and I think I read somewhere recently that Reitman kind of – he doesn't approve of the third act as much as the rest of it. So I kind of agree with that because it's like up through graduation to me is cinematic gold to me. And then it goes off into there's some funny sequence in there, but in general there is some flaws.
Once again, much like Full Metal Jacket, gonna just throw that out there that the first half of the movie is all about the training and everything. They're graduating, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden the second half is a completely different movie. It's all about mm-hmm. them going to Vietnam and fighting and the war and stuff. So it's literally the same movie, except one's a comedy and one's, you know, a action, you know, drama. You know, if you think about it, like I've never heard anybody compare the two, but like now that I've watched it, I compare the two to each other in a way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I always think of it, the other ones, but that's actually, I mean, in the difference between comedy and drama, I mean, it's sort of the same ideas and then just how it's delivered. And I mean, and then obviously there's a whole different message in Full Metal Jacket, obviously, but,
right.
In general,
you know, the message to Stripes is if you screw up, you can be rewarded as a hero, you know, like all you got to do is go save the people that you fucking got endangered, because there's that one line in the movie where he's like, it was our fault. You know, they were captured. So we need to go back there and save them. And in the original cut, that's all, you know, that's all Ramus needs, right? Or whatever. And he's going to join it. And the extended cut, he's actually telling him, no, this is a bad idea, you know, and shit like that. And I hated that. It ruined that scene completely because it undermined everything that later the movie actually, you know, like mm-hmm. with everything, like Ziske would not be, I mean, Ziske looked like an idiot and a loser, you know, at that particular moment. And I'm glad they cut that because, like, you know, I like Harold Ramis's character being more like the hero the whole time, you know, like he's there, he's trying to help his friends, you know. Though there is a great line in the cut scene where he says, you know, hey, I you know, we gotta go and save those guys. And he was like, they hate you. And then he goes, those bastards, you know, right? And it's great. It's funny, but it's like, it's, you know, it wasn't needed. And it really did make Harold Ramis look like an ass slash loser, which he's not. He's a hero in a way, even though he shouldn't be, because they shouldn't have, they should not have gone off to go find their girls and everything, you know?
Now, thinking of this movie as a whole, it's like, I know they filmed it at Fort Knox or whatever in Kentucky. A lot of the movie was filmed in Kentucky. And the military supposedly had really backed them, and the Army was really helped them in every way possible to making the movie. And it only seems like it pushes people away from wanting to join the Army. But in actuality, I read that they gained like 10% increase in people joining after this movie came out.
That's funny.
So it's like really what was the message and stuff like that. But to me, it's just consistent laughs, and sometimes you need that.
How much? I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. So you said that there was a lot of people actually joined. Ally, how old do you have to be to join the Army?
18, 17 with a waiver.
Okay. So how old, like, is there a cutoff age?
It used to be late 20s, early 30s, but then that all changed over the past 20 years.
So how old, because, I mean, those guys were in their 30s when they made this movie, well, I think.
No, Murray, he actually said something that in the documentary, that, and he actually has a line in the movie, says, I got to clean up or dry out or I'll be dead by 30. And he says he turned 30 right after this came out or something like that. So it was like right at that cut point. So
he would have. But Harold Ramis definitely looked older. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how much older they are to each other.
Oh, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John look pretty old for teenagers in Greece.
That's true.
Well, that's, yeah. Yeah, I think Ramis was around 30 or so, because I think he was born like right around 1950 or 49. I was looking him up because I was trying to see what else he had directed and starred in and stuff like that, because unfortunately he passed away, what, like 5-6 years ago. I think they're close to the same age, or they were born at that time.
Let me look. So 1944 for Ramis.
Oh,
Bill Murray was 1950.
Oh, so there's, yeah, okay. So
like,
there's,
yeah. So he should not have probably been allowed, you know, like Harold Ramis would probably have been too old, I think.
I don't think they're playing their actual ages in the movie though.
True. I guess he was playing younger than what he was, but still he looked old. I don't know. But then again, you're right, Grease, whatever. You know, movie magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there I know this came out in 1981. It was it was not number one the week it came out. It came out the same time that Superman 2 was really big at the box office. And then there was a couple other movies, Cannonball Run, For Your Eyes Only, Bond film. Those were ahead of it at the box office, but it ended up making $85 million. So, I mean, that's a pretty big haul, especially back then.
$85 million. Wow.
Yeah. $85 million in 1981. So, and I think on the, one of the documentaries that talked about the budget was like $10 million, cause it was up from $1 million, which Meatballs was a couple years before or something to that effect.
Yeah. So, who directed Meatballs? Did Ivan Reitman direct Meatballs?
I believe so. I know the same. I think it's the same writers and stuff.
40. But,
directed. He directed him in Meatballs. Because it says Reitman directed Murray in four films. So.
Oh yeah. Oh wow. And yeah. Oh wow. And Ramis directed wrote Meatballs as well. So.
Yeah. So I think that built some of the relationship that Murray had with Ramis, and that kind of led to them wanting to do this together. Or him bringing him into it.
Yeah, same exact. Yep. Same exact writing team. Because Meatballs and Stripes was written by Daniel Goldberg as well. Janice Allen did Meatballs, but I think she did not do Stripes.
Yeah, I don't think she was involved. And then there's somebody else. I was at Len
Blum. Len Blum. Bloom, whatever it is. He wrote this too, and he also wrote Meatballs. So also wrote Beethoven second. So there you go. Not first, but second. And he also did a movie called Feds that I remember seeing, but like I remember seeing the picture of, you know, at the video store, but I never watched.
I remember it. Because I think isn't it like Rebecca De Mornay's in it?
Yeah.
And then there's another girl on the front cover too, and she was in some stuff about that time. I'm missing her name, but yeah, it's for all those movies back.
It is Mary Cross.
Okay. It's just you remember, like, I mean, the video boxes when you're there forever and stuff like that. So
yeah, like, well, I mean, it was even before I worked there. I used to just, you know, when I would look at the comedies, because back in those days, that's what you did. You went to the video store, you looked at all the stuff, and you're like, I haven't seen that, or I have seen, you know, because I don't know if you guys are anything like me, but and I think you are if you've watched Stripes a million times, but I tend to like to watch a movie more than once if I really enjoy it, right? Like I'll this Princess Bride, you know, Terminator 2, things like that are just like my safety movies to go back to at any time. I can always, weirdly enough, Dead Man on Campus is there too. I don't know if you guys ever seen that movie, but like, you know, those movies I could just watch because I quote every line from that movie, those movies, you know, and everything. So,
for you, those movies, that's the sort of, and I think everybody has that. It's sort of a comfort food almost, like people have the comfort food and stuff like that. And I mean, it's just movies.
Star Wars was a lot of people's comfort food. Not for me growing up, because I wasn't into it as much until I got older. But you know, yeah, that's funny because it was comfort food. It was something I could watch when I was sick, or I could watch when I was healthy. I could watch, you know, like it's sort of like a marriage, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, being able to do that. So I enjoy it. I love Stripes to death. But honestly, I don't like this Blu-ray because it just has the extended cut, and I'm not a fan of the extended cut. Like I feel like it just slows the movie down. And it's nice to have it, but I would rather have like the choice of being able to watch the original or the extended.
And that's the thing on the DVD. It says extended cut on the DVD on the case, but it gave you the option when you're starting. It says you want to watch the theatrical version or the extended version.
It doesn't do that on the Blu-ray.
Yeah. So
fuck you, Blu-ray.
The most recent viewing of this from the other day, I watched the extended version just so I could see how it fit in there. I watched the scenes first, and then I watched the movie, and I was just like, okay, yeah, I don't think I'm going to watch those extended scenes in the movie again, because it's just to me, it doesn't fit as well for me.
It's nice. Like I showed my dad the acid scene because it was long, and I thought he would get up and walk away and say, all right, I've seen enough. You know, like, but I think he was like enthralled by the fact that there was extra stuff that, you know, like you can't, you know, and it wasn't bad, you know, like it wasn't like, oh my God, this is terrible dialogue, or this is actually really good and funny. But it's just, it didn't, you know, it didn't need to be in there.
Yeah, when you're saying about not being there, that's true. But I also agree with what you said. Your dad said something about it's, and to me, I was thinking it's good to see additional scenes of something that you're so familiar with, so you can see the characters in it's supplementary information, basically, or scenes and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, cool, I'm seeing new stuff from them, but it's as those characters from that time.
Exactly. So here's the thing. So one of the big things in the world of like transmedia stuff, like, you know, you look at like the Avengers and stuff, look at the Avengers or Marvel, you know, right? They have those Marvel one shots, you know, right? So they have those Marvel one shots where like short films where they continue like the story, and they have like characters were there or whatever, right? And so it just gets really kind of strange where it's like it's the same characters, but they're dealing with a different like scene or something. It's more It's more from their characters. And that's actually more of what they do these days, right? They want to give you more, you know, because like those scenes where all of a sudden you're like, oh, I wonder how, you know, Bill Murray talked Harold Ramis into coming, you know, right? Mm-hmm. Like you might wonder that. And then you can see it. You can see that scene, you know, or hey, they, you know, these two guys like left and went off base. You know, where do they go? Huh, here's a story. Sometimes they put it in a comic book, you know, sometimes they put it on the web for people to see. That's what they're doing now. And it's neat to see it sort of in this sort of old movie, you know, that they shot scenes that kind of extended the, you know, the process. But in the same sense, like, it's cool. Like, I can watch those separately. I don't need them back in the movie, you know, necessarily.
Yeah, I watched it that time with it in there, and I'm like, okay, I don't want to do that again.
If you want to, like, go back and watch the deleted scenes. That's the beautiful thing about deleted scenes in movies, right? Mm-hmm. You know? What do you think, Alfred?
I agree. Sometimes the deleted scenes... I mean, the king of deleted scenes was the Aliens when came out. Those were, like, the best deleted scenes ever. And then they started having them dribs and drabs. I remember there's a version of Superman on television in Star Trek 2 that had, like, these scenes. I was like, wow, I don't remember those from the theater. and then they slowly became a thing. And then just sometimes a lot of, like, the Star Trek 6 has some deleted scenes, but they really don't add to it. It's like, ah, kind of like how they had it before.
Right.
Sometimes it can ruin or enhance. I've never seen it really just kind of make just a lukewarm difference. So, like,
Terminator 2, best example. There's a scene where they actually show, what's his name? The killer, the T-1000. You will know before then, but there's a scene where there's a deleted scene where the T-1000 has, like, figured out that he's been had by the thing. So he goes over and he kills the dog. You hear him kill the dog, and he pulls off the thing, and it says the dog's real name, you know, on his, like, leash. They did not need that in the movie.
No.
Like, no.
I've never seen that. I'm glad I haven't seen that, and I'm glad that that was cut, because that just doesn't seem like it would really...
It's just brutal and nasty, and, like, I get it, because then later, now he knows, you know, but he knew when she, like, you know, you could tell when he killed the guy through the, you know, through the milk and everything, and then he said the line or whatever, and he, you know, he pulls it out, and you see it, and he kind of gives a look like, oh, shit, you know, they know who I am, and that's all. Robert Patrick is that good of an actor. I'll say this. He's that good of an actor. All he has to do is just give a look, you know.
Yeah.
He did not need that scene, and I was so pissed that I watched it. After that, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to ever, like, watch these deleted scenes again, because I'm not in support of, like, not seeing a dog get killed. Now, you don't actually see the thing going into the dog, you know.
Right.
You hear the dog go, whoop, you know, right? when he kills him, and then you see him pull off the, you know, pull it up, and, you know, whatever. So I was just, it was so brutally nasty that I honestly think it would have killed the movie had they actually had that in there.
Well, the two scenes that I did find were fascinating, they were kind of, like, interesting, but the part where Michael Biehn, it's a dream sequence with her and him, that was, could have been left in there, because he said he felt really terribly that part, because they put so much into that scene, and then at the end where it's kind of like her on the swing just going, is it really safe or whatever,
right? So there's a couple deleted scenes that were superfluous to me, like they had no point to them whatsoever. So
I agree.
I'm a huge fan of that.
Well, I know that's always a decision that the editor and the director has to make and stuff like that. usually the scenes that are cut are cut for good reason, and it sounds like in the purpose of T2 that was good, but I mean, I know in Stripes definitely the cuts, but there
we
is.
We gotta talk about one of my favorite scenes in Stripes.
What's your favorite scene in Stripes?
The opening sequence where he's driving the cab. Because I used to love the line, "I shouldn't have drank all that cough syrup this morning." That's like one of my favorite lines.
Well, I always remember the lady that was riding in the car because she was the head principal mistress thing on a movie called Private School that came out about that time in the mid-80s. She was the head lady of that. And she ended up hooking up with Ray Walston's character from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
What?
It's funny.
I don't want to see that movie. Ew,
it's gross. Funny. It's funny for the way that it's handled in Private School, but when she pops up in that movie, it's just that whole sequence where he's going back. I took this job because I like people.
So
yeah, I take pictures, action shots, look scared or whatever.
Yeah.
Then he just pulls a car over and he just tosses the keys into the river and just quits.
It's like, I quit my job today.
I'm just not going to take it.
Yeah, and he goes home. He loses his girlfriend. He talks to Russell and he's like, I've lost my car, my job, my girlfriend,
my apartment,
my apartment, all in the last couple hours or something like that.
It's how did he lose his apartment though?
He dropped that good looking pizza on the ground too. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Good pizza.
Now I don't want to eat. You know, a little.
Yeah. Yeah, it was,
but how do you lose his apartment? That's the question. Like, I didn't get that. Like, does his girlfriend own the apartment or something, or can he not pay rent because of, you know, his girlfriend, whatever? Like,
She was probably footing the bill, maybe.
I don't know. Oh,
but talking about that scene actually brings me into something we've talked about earlier with the extended cuts. When he says the thing, when Russell takes the beer out and he's like, the last beer, he's like, fine, we'll split it. That's the end of it in the regular cut. In the extended cut, when they had that scene where he talks about the Winnebago and all that stuff, John takes the beer and says, I thought you said we'd split it.
Yeah.
And it sort of plays off of it. It's not a flaw because it doesn't lead into something missing in the story,
yeah,
but it sort of enhances it. It plays that joke up a little bit more.
Yeah, well, yeah, because, you know, because he did say split it, and then later he does try to drink the thing after he's done push-ups, 5 push-ups, you know, he tries to drink the drink. So it's funny. It's like a funny continued thing. And see, here's the thing. If you read the actual, like, shooting script of the movie, you know, before they cut things, you would see that probably that added scene, right? Like, of, you know, how it just continued, because it just, the way they did it, and it's the same thing that they did with the cut scene of going to Columbia, they just cut, you know, right? They said, okay, we're gonna just cut from this scene to this scene and just cut out like 10 scenes, you know, or cut out the you would just cut from that to them abandoning the car. You know, we're not parking here, we're abandoning it. And they walk into the
it would be interesting to read that script too, because not just the stuff that they cut there, because I mean, I think that would be interesting to read, but also the improvisation that happened supposedly on set, hearing what and reading what was originally the original idea and stuff like that would be
the original script, because I guarantee you it was not nearly as funny. I bet Bill saw that things weren't funny and just ramped up the funny shit, you know, made things, especially his lines, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was just perfect. But, so I guess we probably should wrap it up.
Okay.
Unless anybody else has anything else to
consider. Did you have any other, scenes, Alfred, that you wanted to discuss?
I like the part where he does fire the mortar and then John King, it flies in and it hits the tower and Warren knows it drops like a rock. And he's like, and then John King's like, does this mean we're done for the day? He's like,
he's choking him.
Yeah.
I always thought, I had originally thought that Hulk had died, right, in that crash or whatever. But I think there's a line in the movie where he kind of explained that Hulk is, you know, is in the hospital or something, you know, or
they mentioned in passing. I think Reitman mentioned in the documentary that originally his Hulka did die in that scene, but then they brought it back. They said it was a comedy, so they didn't want to have anybody get killed.
Killed in an army movie where people are shooting at each other.
Yeah.
Nobody should die. Yeah. Heaven forbid. Well,
I don't think when they were in Czechoslovakia, they showed anybody getting shot. Actually, it shows stuff getting blown up and shot at and people diving out of towers and diving out of guard stations and stuff. But I think they did sort of, I guess this was after, but the A-Team philosophy, it's like they can blow everything up and nobody ever gets shot.
Or G.I. Joe like that.
Yeah.
The thing I laughed at is when the guy gets blown up and everything, that the Czechoslovakian guy gets blown up and his tower falls down, he falls off the tower. Or when he jumps off the tower because he knows that thing's coming, and he lands, and I guess his butt's all burning, so he's like, he's like running.
Yeah,
that shit was hilarious. Probably one of the best, like, I don't know, best little, like, little, it's little things like that that, like, still, like, I don't think I laughed at when I was a kid. I didn't find that funny. Now, as an adult, I'm like, oh my God, that's hilarious. You know,
and I think movies like this, and there's other ones too, it's like the ones that catch for whoever and in whatever reason it catches in somebody's individual love of films, that you could watch it and see something new every time, something, some little response or something happens in the periphery or something like that. And this is one for me,
by the way. It's funny because, you know, whenever we do this show, you guys are a little older than me, not much older, but a little older, so, like, I wasn't even born when this movie came out. You know, I was born in 82. So I was born like a year after this movie came out. And so I think it's really funny because, I mean, this movie is still very near and dear to my heart because of video and Betamax and everything. But it's a little different from when you guys saw it because you guys are a little older and could probably appreciate a lot more of the humor.
I saw it completely different as a preteen and teenager and stuff like that. And as adult, it's like, yeah, it's totally different now. Anything else or.
Yeah. Alfred, is anything else that you wanted to, cause I know you've been a little bit more silent than us. So we were trying to make sure you get all the stuff you want to talk in.
Of course, the part, if you have anything with a bikini, low rise mesh, he's getting there. The issue of the clothing. It's just a movie. I just couldn't watch it. And it just, there's so much, it's so rich with stuff. It's just hard to pick a favorite thing, but I think I was able to share my favorite parts of it. And when I was considering joining the military, I was like, I asked my mom, you think this is how basic training is? And she's like, no, I don't think so.
I will say the Army wanted me, of course, because you know, they're trying to recruit people at a fair. I was like at a fair in like Richmond or something. And I was going around, walking around, and the Army had they had their own little like table, you know, and everything. And they had this really cool like Army tank top. And I was like, ooh, I want that. How much is that? And they're like, you know, if you could do 5 pushups, we'll give it to you for free. I was like, and at this time I was like I was still a kid and I was doing karate, you know, on my knuckles and shit, you know. I was older. I was 18 or 19. I was older, but I was still in shape enough to do it. Right. So I was like, all right, 5 pushups. That's it. So I did 5 pushups, like pretty good pushups too. Not his, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 3, 3, 4, you know, 1. I was, I did them, you know, pretty well. And, the guy was like, wow, that's really good. You should join us. You know, here's your tank top. You should join us. And I was like, oh, well, are you guys okay with the fact that I'm deaf in my left ear? And like, you're deaf? I was like, yeah, like literally I don't have an eardrum there. And they're like, never mind. You're okay. You can keep going. Like, you know, cause they can't have anybody with a disability like that in case I'm in war, you know, and I can't hear something from one side or whatever, you know, it's a hazard to the rest of the platoon, you know?
So that was the end of the day for the military for you.
Unfortunately that's from the very get go. I always knew that. I always knew I couldn't join. So like, I always knew I'd always could bring that up and they'd be like, nope, keep going. Cause they need people who don't have any disabilities that could affect, you know, them when they're out in war.
Yeah, it crossed my mind for the Air Force when my dad was in the Air Force, retired, and he was in there for 20 some years. But I did ROTC for 1 year in high school, and after that, I was just like, I'm done. I'm quite okay. That's not my path.
I did Fork Union Military Academy for one summer, you know, And it was nothing like how military school would be, you know, because it's summer school. So it's like less, you know, it's more like what police academy would be. People are just joking, having fun. And you know what I mean? Like nobody's taking it seriously at all. And you don't have to get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and do, you know, 10 mile runs, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. For me, it was a specific, the haircut had to have the no nicks or shine, the belt buckle and the shoes had to be shined perfectly. And it was just like, I was just like, yeah, that's just not for me. I mean, I respect all get out of all the people who do military. It just, you know, that's not a path. And sometimes, and that was not a path for me. So
understandable. And hey, you know, I support our troops and I support everybody who does go in the military, because that is amazing.
That is a sacrifice unlike any other
for our country, especially. Like we need anybody who's definitely willing to go. So Captain America's to you guys, you know, we love you guys. So, hope you guys aren't turning into super soldiers.
Here you go.
So anyway, sure. I guess that is it. You know, I think we covered everything we needed to cover. I mean, I was thinking of the stuff that I wanted to bring up, and I think I brought up everything. The biggest flaw being the fact that I just don't think they should have been viewed as heroes at the end of the movie. But then again, that's what happened at Ghostbusters. At the end of Ghostbusters, they get all clapped and people are like cheering them on, and then, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a similar ending to Ghostbusters. And then on top of that, you know, Dickless was right, you know, in a way, even though he turned off the containment system or whatever, they were a hazard to, you know, an environmental hazard and everything. So,
and now it's going to be interesting to see how they tie that into the all this into the.
Oh, I can't wait. I think, was it you who sent me a message about Ghostbusters being, coming out in June? Was it you, Joe, or somebody?
No, I know they've been playing around with the dates and stuff like that because of everything with COVID, but
or was it you, Alfred?
I don't think somebody
sent me a message because I said I was gonna wait until Black Widow came out before
I was talking about Black Widow with other stuff, other movies like Quiet Place and stuff like that's coming out, but
somebody sent me a message saying that it wasn't you guys. I'm trying to remember who it was, but somebody else messaged me and was like, oh, you know, Ghostbusters is coming out in June, you know, right? And I was like, damn, that should be my next, never mind, that's gonna be my next one I'm gonna go see in the theater, because I love Black Widow, but like if I had to choose between Marvel or Ghostbusters wins hand down. Yeah. Unless it's the lady Ghostbusters, then they can go.
But this one, Jason Reitman's doing. So, I mean, I mean, hopefully there'll be something. I mean, I think he'll.
I think Ivan's probably producing and like having a big hand in it too. So. I've seen the preview, like a little clip of it. So it looks pretty fun. I mean, you know, I'd watch it. I guess talk about real quick what everybody's been up to, starting with the fact that all of us, so we are a little late, I guess, not really, but not too late, but like, I guess we normally do it earlier in the month, but we're a little late. But also last month, we, in March, we did, we all got together and worked on a movie called Echo Lake Massacre. And so Alfred got to see what a Sick Flick production set was like, and hopefully had a good time.
I did.
We all enjoyed you. Completely. And you guys got to work together, so that was great. Got to have scenes together and everything.
Yeah, I had to play the more serious type of one, and he got to be the one that got to ham it up a little bit more.
Well, I mean, it was funny. I don't think it was written that way, but like that's the portrayal that I think Alfred definitely went with it, and I loved it. So yeah. I was a-okay with the hamming up, as long as like there was maybe, I think there's one scene that might have been a little too hammy, so we had to scale it back a little bit, but that's the point of directing, you know, like you gotta let people know when you know it might be a little too much for the you know, because you don't want, then that's the thing, like you want the scenes to feel sort of genuine together, you know? So if like one scene is all of a sudden like completely over the top and then everything else is normal, doesn't really work that way. But I thought you guys both did a great job, and I'm excited. I can't wait. Hopefully in September it'll be released so people can finally see it. It's a long time in the making, like 10 years in the making. So I'm like, let's get this fucker done. Let's, you know, let's shoot this fucker.
Right.
So yeah. And Alfred, what have you been up to?
I'm getting ready for one of my first live shows at Push Comedy Theater in Norfolk this coming May the 4th. We're doing a May the 4th Be With You Star Wars improv and sketch comedy show at The Plot, which is right across the street from Push Comedy Theater outside. So we're having a Star Wars themed show, and we're looking forward to that. So I'm doing some stuff, get ready for that this week.
Are there tickets still available?
Yeah, I believe so.
Sweet. So we'll put a link down there so people can check that out. What about you, Joe? What have you been up to?
Well, we've been I've been working with you on we just finished those multiple projects there, and we got a couple more things that we're talking about and working starting
TikToks coming up in June, and
yeah, and more stuff will be hitting later this year, and we'll be continuing to work on that, and not sure how much we're going to talk about that yet, but there'll be more information that to come eventually.
There will be. They gotta check. I mean, the link to Sick Flick Productions will be at the bottom. So, Alfred, send me the link to get tickets to your show, and I'll put them in the, in the liner notes here so people can check that out.
Will do.
People need to support your local theaters and stuff. But yeah, I enjoyed doing the show today. I had a blast. It was, it's one of those movies. I swear to God, it's one of those movies that whenever I was like not feeling too good or was tired and I just needed to put a movie on to kind of like rest to, you know, and relax to, this is Stripes was one of the movies, you know, that I could just watch in the living room, just relax and just lay down and watch, you know, or whatever, and not have to, you know. Ghostbusters is another one, and yeah. I mean, lots of classics. Sadly, Ivan Reitman hasn't really done anything else like this. He did Twins, I think, you know, which is okay, but I think he did that. I know he did that. I know he did the Evolution movie that was just terrible. So I'm just glad he got this and Meatballs and all of those movies done, you know, back to back to back. Kindergarten Cop, I think he also did. So, you know, great. I would love to see him do. He was also, here's real quick, I don't know if you guys know this. Did you know he was the original director hired for Memoirs of an Invisible Man before John Carpenter did it?
I did not know that. Which is a great movie, by the way.
It's a great movie, but it's a completely different one than what it was originally planned. It was going to be a comedy, and it was going to be like a Ghostbusters style comedy with Chevy Chase as the Invisible Man dealing with like the supernatural and all this, you know, like a special effects driven comedy. And Chevy Chase was the one who said he wanted it to be more about the, experiencing the loneliness of invisibility. Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff. And so he won as the star. The star always wins when it comes to the director. And Ivan Reitman left, and John Carpenter took it on, and William Goldman still wrote the script the way that they wanted it made and everything, and hasn't, but I think it's interesting to see, because I wonder if it's the same script just done as, just done with John Carpenter's tomes and stuff. Because I wonder if there's any comedy in it that could have been comedy, but wasn't very funny because it was the tone of the movie that they had. I don't know. But anyway, Ivan Reitman was the original director. So that would have been an interesting, like if an alternate universe, that would be an interesting movie to see what would have happened, you know, a what if, you know,
what if.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Guys.
I'm looking forward to the next group. We're going to be doing a little bit of a different series in the next Hollywood Boulevard podcast, and another picks, and that's going to be real interesting.
We can mention what it's going to be. So this one was all like 80s movies, I guess. And that another thing that was the original like plan, there was no like original plan, but like I chose The Thing and then Alfred chose Aliens. So they were sort of in the 80s thing. And Joe, you were just like, I want to change it up and not do the same thing. I mean, you could have done like RoboCop. You could have done, you know, any of those kind of sci-fi kind of action stuff, but you chose to do a comedy, which I think is smart because it just gives us something different. But the theme, I guess, was all 80s, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the next theme is going to be all TV shows. So that's going to be fun.
Cool.
Yes. We'll see what we all come up with. You know, I can't wait. So the next one's going to be in May, June, and July. So get ready for that. And I'll let you guys know when, you know, I guess when we're supposed to do it. So, you know, I'm guessing it's going to be like close to the end of the month like this, you know.
All right.
Pretty gotcha. Simple. As long as nobody has any objections.
I don't.
Yeah. But thank you guys. This is awesome. I had a blast. What'd you guys think? You guys had a blast?
Enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Thanks for hosting, Joe.
Oh, thanks for including me. And I'm glad you guys enjoyed this film as much in the same vein as I have it. But I look forward to the next series.
That's a fact check. Army train, sir. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. All right. Bye.
Army train, sir.